in what will hopefully be today the final share on this topic of determining the time of death. We left off discussing the very controversial shita of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I think lefi anias dati, to summarize it, I would say that everybody, after seeing the full scope of written documentation, the shame of Moshe, that based on his tshuva in Kuf Lamed Beis, and based on the letter from 1985 to Dr. Bondi, based on the testimony of Rabbi Tendler and the other family members, that it is clear that Rav Moshe recognized that based on the modern Harvard criteria for brain death, including an imaging study that demonstrates a lack of circulation of blood to the brain, that constituted Hutaz Rosho at least declaring death enough to remove somebody from a respirator. That seems to be fairly clear in the written material and the testimony of the family. Rav Schachter seemed to be accepting that as well. The only reservation that was a very significant reservation was what we ended off with, which was for Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv, who point out that they feel that while Rav Moshe was willing to concede or willing to recognize Harvard criteria, brain death, along with the imaging study, to be enough to say Hutaz Rosho, this person is dead, Legabe, removal from the respirator, they felt he certainly would not have allowed for a kumva asay, taking of somebody's heart, based on the same criteria. The other caveat you always have to throw in, even granting that Rav Moshe is passing this way, is the little addition that he throws in about the fact that there is almost total decay of the brainstem as an assumption he had, as represented by the lack of blood circulating to the brain. That seems to be something he keeps throwing in that line, and that is a scientifically debatable point, meaning that despite the fact that there's no blood circulating to the brain, and lysis and death of brain cells begins, it is not necessarily true that it constituted enough of a decay of the physical matter of the brain that really would satisfy what Rav Moshe would require, the halacha. But he seemed to have gotten the fact that there was a very significant amount of decay, and that will forever be unknown exactly what would have been required. One of the problems with Rav Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach to Rav Moshe is that in trying to explain why would it be that one could recognize brain death when it comes to removing somebody from a respirator, right? A goses, removing them from a respirator, but not recognize brain death when it comes to taking out their heart, it's a very difficult chiluk to make, right? Unless you assume what Rav Shlomo Zalman assumes, which is that removing a respirator is just hasara samonei. It's just removing the impediment for the neshama to leave, and is not the same as a maaser etzicha on a goses. And the real problem with attributing that to Rav Moshe is his non shita against the idea that removing a respirator is just hasara samonei. So that is another point that is left hanging and difficult to reconcile. What we want to focus in this last discussion of this topic is on the even more striking chiluk that Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv made. And they said the following. In response to those proponents of brain death to do everything, including heart transplants, and claiming that Rav Moshe, the sure raya that Rav Moshe was okay even with heart transplants, was the fact that he was matir in the United States individuals to undergo a transplant procedure, in other words, to receive a heart. So Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv both said that doesn't prove anything. Why? Because it's quite possible that it's mutter to receive the heart, yet still usser to take the heart from the donor. So what we want to focus on today is understanding why they would see things this way. Where does the chiluk come in? How simple or not simple is it really that you can not take a heart because you're killing the person, but you can put yourself on a list and be willing to accept the heart and that not be a problem. What makes the chiluk or the whole discussion even more complicated and more controversial is the insistence by Rabbi Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman that this is true only in the United States or in Chutz La'aretz and not in Eretz Yisrael. For some reason, there's another nekuda in there that will allow us to do it in a country where there's rove non-Jews, but not in a country where there's rove Yehudim. So we have to understand both those points.
Why is it bound to accept and not a thing?
Which question? Number two?
To accept the heart doesn't...
Oh, so that's what we have to see. Obviously, we have to analyze. Right? Let's get right into it. We have to analyze what exactly is involved in accepting a heart. Right? Now, if there's anything that's going on there that is in the geder of Meiser Ritzicha, right? Even if it's not an act of Ritzicha itself, B'yadayim, that's going to be Av Vayabri. So in other words, if somehow I could show or assume that a person who is willing to accept the heart and all that that entails, and we're going to see, I'm going to show you exactly what's involved in putting yourself on a list and what's the whole process of getting the heart. So we're going to have to determine whether or not there is some lav or some geder tzicha that would not allow me to do that even to save my own life. And it's going to be a machlokas, haposkim. Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv will only allow it if it involves non-Jews. We have to understand what's the difference Jews, non-Jews. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rabbi Bleich, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Waldenberg all will allow it even, actually Rav Waldenberg I shouldn't put on that list. He also is machalik between Jews and non-Jews, but everyone else on that list allowed it, right? Seems to be much more at ease with it even if it's a Jew. They were not machalic necessarily. Rav Moshe is unknown, I should really say. The ones who are mafurash, Rav Bleich and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik mafurash, that it wouldn't make a difference whether in Eretz Yisrael or in America, you still should be able to do it. So you have to understand that shita, which is very different than this other shita, and where the chila comes in. So what it involves is exactly what you're asking. Let's analyze now exactly, we got to know two things well. You have to know what's going on in real metzias. What's going on in having a transplant done, in putting yourself on a list, and then accepting the heart? And two, how do we define what a Maaser Ritzicha is, right, to the point that it's Yahav V'Yavor or not? So I wanted to start with, on page 4, go to page 4 of the handout. Let's talk a little about this Maaser Ritzicha or not, exactly what's going on. First question that I would ask. So, Pikuach Nefesh is docha every isser in the Torah except for three, right? And one we're interested in is ritzicha. It is not docha ritzicha. What about pikuach nefesh of 100 people against ritzicha of a single individual? Does that make a difference? Anyone know any gemaras that might touch upon this point?
You know the specific
person? Let's start. No, you don't know. You don't know. It's a good question. That's very much nogea to the sugya, right? So let's say you don't know, right? You have, the story is, you have some bandits come by, and you're with a group of people, and they say, we only want to kill one of you, right? Throw one out, or we're going to kill all of you. So it's the pikuach nefesh of the rabbim against sakana for a single individual. Should that make a difference?
Yes.
Are you allowed to throw out one person and sacrifice nefesh, tachas, harbei nefashos? No, not. You're certainly not. Good. Nefesh, tachas, nefesh. Havachomer now, right? A single nefesh against a single nefesh, right? That's Ritzicha. It's Yahav Yavor. Why? Right? So that's the Gemara that we've talked about several times already this year. I wanted you to see it one, Bli Neder, one final time. Okay? Page 4. Turn to the side. So here it is, that Gemara. This time I want to really look at it carefully. The Gemara says, Ritzach Gufa Minalan, Smaru. Right? Kill him or I'm going to kill you. So you have to be willing to die. You can't kill. Why? Miyama de Dama Didach, Samech Tve, Dilma Dama Dahu Gavra, Samech Tve. Famous, famous law. So, we all know this Gemara, and hopefully by now we all know Rashi. Right, I've mentioned that several times. How does Rashi, what's the Svara here? What's the Svara? Who can explain it to me? Somebody just give me one explanation for this Svara. What is the Svara? Why can't I, Mishum Pikuach Nefesh, kill somebody else? What does Rashi say?
The worth of the other.
Is that it? Is that what Rashi says? I want to really know what Rashi says. I'll tell you what I think Rashi says. Here's what I think Rashi says. Rashi says the following. Point number one, right? What you're saying, I think, is point number two. Point number one is, and my question is going to be, what do I need point number two? That's why you're not a good setup, so I have to take it on. Right? Point number one is the following, right? Math, right? Arithmetic. Hashem does not want a Jewish neshama to be lost. So much so that every mitzvah is nidcha legabe that event. But here, what's going to happen? Either way, a neshama is going to be lost. If I get killed, a neshama is lost. And if I kill, a neshama is going to get lost. So that's a cancel out. That's in a wash. What's left? What's going to be machriya? What should happen? The fact that if I kill, there's also an avera. There's no heter avera because someone's going to die anyway. Do I need to say anything else? Is this far enough? If you need to say, this far is enough. Simple. Neshama's going to die. Math is no avera. But that's not what the Gemara does. The Gemara throws in another one. The Gemara says, who says that your blood flows any better than his? We'll leave a little ambiguous the meaning of that phrase. What do I need that expression for?
Well, we just said that even 100 to 1.
Ah, good. Someone caught on.
So according to Rashi, or according to the first one of Rashi, that so there we should for sure throw out that one guy. The math is overwhelming in the favor of killing one guy.
Right, but could be what? What could be though?
Could be that his nefesh is more.
Could be that his single nefesh, right? Who's to say his single nefesh isn't more chashuv than all of this, right? What if we knew? By the way, could we ever know? Who knows? Hashem knows the value of everybody's neshama, right? No human, I mean, I wish everybody should really realize this, but not to be too cynical, but the emphasis is that nobody knows the value of anyone else's neshama, no one knows how great a tzaddik anyone else is, only Hashem knows. So we can never make that calculation, right? But, what's the Havamina? The Havamina was, were it true, right? What do we need that other one? Because it could have been, despite the math and despite the Aveira, it could have been that if I did know that my neshama was worth more, that would have been machriya, despite the Aveira. In other words, if my blood was sweeter, flowed smoother, whatever that expression means, we can talk about it in a second, it could be, despite the fact that I have to do an Aveira, my greatness overrides that Aveira. But, Kamash Malan, no! Who do you think you are? We don't know who is better. We don't know whose neshama is worth it. So therefore, it's a definite wash, and we fall back on no other. So why am I making such a big deal out of this? Because it's very critical. What is the meaning of Dama Dahu Gavra Tzomek Tver? What does that mean now? What's pshat? Rashi's pshat is very clear. It's along the lines of what we've been saying. Miyodeya shenavsho chaviva liyotro yoser minefesh chaver. According to Rashi, what is that line saying? Look what we just said. Viewed that way, so we'll never know any type of comparable value between two neshamas. Because only Hashem knows, only Hashem knows the chavivos of any given neshama. What's an alternative pshat? What else could that one mean? Aside from chavivos, the yotzer, what else could it have meant? There's another way certain Rishonim and Achronim learn this line. We're going to see it in a minute. Can anyone think of what's a possible other way of learning this line? Aside from Chavivus Liyotzer, what else could it mean?
Descendants.
Say it again?
Descendants.
Oh, really, you're putting that into the whole Cheshvan. That's still along the line. See, we're focused, and according to Rashi, we're certainly focused on the issue being the value of the Neshama in some metaphysical sense. Whether it be because of descendants that are going to come from him, because of great tzidkus that he's done, going to do, that's all one area. A whole other way of looking at this is, no, what the issue is the viability of the neshama. What do I mean by that? The, let's say, the value halachically legabe a meiser betzicha. Let's say I said to you that one of these people was a treifa, right? Is there, what's the din for killing a treifa? A human treifa. Are you chayav misa?
Yeah.
No. Go say it's yes. Treifa, no. So it could be, right? Although I never would have really thought of this, I have to admit, until I saw it in the Rishonim, I would have done. But there are those that are going to suggest learning pshat along these lines. And if you just take a look, turn the page upright, I'll give you a few examples that actually presented by Avraham Sofer. He names the Me'iri who gave the example that I just gave. According to the Me'iri, let's say in that case that we started with, if you have the guys come by that want to kill everyone in the cave, if you don't throw out a particular individual, he says, but if one of them, if that individual is a treifa, no problem. The Mitzvah Schinach says the same thing in the Gabe and Ubar. That should be no surprise to us, because we that's Mefurash, right? If it's a choice between an Ubar and the mother, so the mother won. Why? What was the Pshat, Pashat Pshat and Rashi and Nekamara? Because the Ubar's Neshama is not quite the same as the neshama of the mother. It's not a maaser ritzicha if I kill the Uba. Any other examples? Tiferes Yisrael is the one that got me the most off guard. Let's take a look. If you look in the paragraph on the top, I just want you to see this inside. It's in that second paragraph, about halfway in. V'chein ayem b'tiferes Yisrael. Shekosev amase ula, that we're going to talk about a lot in a minute, so don't worry about it for now. But it's an example of where somebody had chayisha, and it seemed to be that we were giving up somebody's chayisha in order to give someone else chayyot. The ikur lemar, the achar gav, the kamel and the chayshin and the chayisha. Normally, if somebody has only a few moments left, chayisha, to kill them is still mitzicha, right? Or we thought it was. Haynu be'ein chayikiyum kinegdo. And here's where he uses the Gemara. He uses the expression in the Gemara. You see how he's moving away from Rashi's approach that this is a chavivus to Yotzer, and he's talking in terms of viability, but that becomes something that's important. And he goes even further. Adif mivade chayisha. All he did, you'll see when we do that Gemara, is he said something. But the Tiferes Yisrael says, he could have even done a Maaseh B'Yadayim because of this. This is the most extreme that this is taken. If you look a little lower in the section, you don't have to do it now, but the Tzitz Eliezer, in grappling with these Shittos, he comes to the following conclusion and he puts it all into the following perspective. He says that what we're seeing is that when it comes to Yahar V'Yavor, that's only for three Isurim. One of them is Ritzicha. If the killing of an individual, by whatever means it takes place, is not a Maaseh Ritzicha, it is not Yahar V'Yavor. What does that open up for us? It opens up for us what we need to do now to determine the Shittos, the Gabe, this person being allowed to put himself on a list and receive a heart, right? Despite the fact that it's going to absolutely result in the taking of the heart from the donor, and of course we're assuming, according to those that assume brain death is not halachic death, and therefore this would be a maaser ritzicha, or not. Is it a maaser ritzicha, or is it comparable to any of these cases? So to analyze that, the first thing we need to know is the metzius. Who here knows what happens when you have a transplant? How it works, the system. I went to a shiur this year given by someone who described this process, I thought, very inaccurately. And I hope I'm right and he's wrong. And he threw innuendo, I guess because there were some celebrated cases of celebrities seeming to get organs quickly. So they were throwing in that money's an issue here and who you know, and the taxi and all that kind of stuff. In my experience, and I've had experience in this process, that does not occur, certainly in the United States. What does occur is the following. Here is the entire process from top to bottom. The first thing you have to do is declare the individual brandy. They have to meet those criteria we spoke about several weeks ago. And two, you have to see what is the condition of his heart. This is all going on by the donor, right? He's got to be declared brain dead. He's got to have a heart that has not been damaged by his disease or by medication or by an arrest or all sorts of things. Once this happens, they then get consent. Consent of the family, or if you had some kind of donor card, that would be good enough, right? Consent to take his heart. Once these three steps are done, and this is very important, this is when the first decision of Ritzicha, assuming this is Ritzicha, right, takes place. The decision is made at this point. Have we involved any recipient at all? Is the list involved here? Not at all. At this point, the decision is made to take the heart. And no matter what happens, no matter what any individual does on the list, this heart is going to be taken. If for some reason they change their mind, the person's going to be buried. There isn't going to be any prolonged life for this person. They're going to be off the respirator. They're going to be let go. So once this decision is made, it's over. Really, that was made back here with brain death. Taking out the heart was what you needed steps 2 and 3. Okay? Now, a long time ago, let's say months ago, there was a list of transplant recipients, people waiting to get a transplant. That happened independent of all this. Person just is dying while it's on and needs a heart. His doctor said the only thing left to do for you is get you a new heart. So he gets on the list. How do you get on the list? How do you move up the list? There's two determinants. As far as I know, as far as I've experienced, determinant number one is the severity of your illness, how quickly you need it, which is why people can hop ahead of other people, right? The other one's chronology, first come, first serve. But if you need it more, you're going to get pushed up. It depends on what's going on in the hospital. This is the only place I've seen games played sometimes, which is, you know that if there's like criteria, if you're on 3 medications versus 2, and you're on a respirator and you're on this, that pushes you up. So sometimes that's the closest doctors have get to manipulating this list, is they'll, like, even though the patient's not going to benefit from another drug, they'll throw it on just to get them up on the list, right? That's what you do when you're desperate about your patient. Short of that, those are the two things: how sick you are and how soon you've gotten on them.
They don't take into account viability?
That's what I'm saying. How sick you are is viability.
How likely the person is to benefit.
Oh, yeah. Well, you won't get on the list. Right. I didn't want to get into all of it, but then, since you asked, yeah. Viability meaning a likelihood that it'll work, like you're thinking, I think. And there's something else. Becoming a transplant patient is an amazing experience. Very difficult. Not only the surgery, but the rest of the life. They have to go for biopsies and be on certain medications with certain side effects. You know, it's better than being dead, right? And it's gotten better than that. People are happy that I have transplants. They're not unhappy, for the most part. The people I see, which is often teenagers, are miserable. You know, teenagers are very, very self-conscious about their appearance, and it's going to affect their appearance, and it's going to have all sorts of effects. So compliance. Viability in terms of will this work, and the degree of compliance could keep you off the list. Where I work, the transplant people are known as, I never use this expression because I have to like them, the bleeding hearts. They let everybody on, right? Even people like that we know are going to mess up, right? So I'm sometimes taking care of patients that have got transplants, and what a waste. You know, it's like a cool amenity that they hold me. Why? Because they let this person on the list, they let this person get a heart, which could have gone to somebody who would have been very compliant, and this person wastes it. I hate to sound crude, but they waste it in the sense they're non-compliant with their medications, and then they end up losing it. So where someone else could have made a whole life out of it, you know? So that's the cool amenity. They don't want to say no to anybody, so they let everybody on. But sometimes you have to be cool to be kind.
But beyond the compliance, were they teenagers placed higher on the list than 83-year-olds?
That's a good question. So, definitely. 83-year-olds? Definitely. 83-year-olds don't get on.
I
But no. So that officially, as far as I know, no. Subconsciously, it certainly could be. We seem to have much less problems getting hearts than the adult population. So to some degree, but see, there's a cutoff. Most pediatric transplants can't take a full adult heart anyway. They're waiting for a pediatric case. So it's a different pool of donors. Where it gets tricky is, let's say, the older teenagers, where there's an overlap. And over there, I'm really not sure what goes on. No one officially talks about such a thing, but it wouldn't surprise me that they would say, here's somebody I want to live, who can live 50 more years or so, versus, let's not cap anybody's life. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's happening in reality. But the point is well taken.
Is there any artificial organs?
Not yet. To tell you the truth, what's going to happen sooner than there'll be there are artificial organs in terms of heart. No, there's no such thing. It didn't work out well. It was an attempt, but it, you appreciate the Bria. They can't come close to Hashem and put it together in the heart. But what will be something will be, as we talked about a very long time ago, stem cells and cloning. That's gonna change things. Because you're going to be able to form a heart from a person's own cells.
If you were to be able to clone yourself and just have them on standby, just clone whatever you need, an organ or something, is that anything that could ever happen?
Chas v'shalom.
Or is it really clone you consider having in shalom?
You missed that. You can get the tape. We'll talk about it. It's a good question. We talked about it. Let me move on. So, all right. The guy is now on the list. Heart is to be taken. What do we got to do now? We got to make sure it's compatible. We got to go to the top of the list. Here's where there's a decision made finally by whom? It's actually the second decision made by the recipient, right? The first decision was allow his name to be on the list. Let's pause for a second. Allowing your name to be on the list. Is that anything? Is that a Maiser Tzicha? Is that anything at all? How many people are on the list? The estimate, I've got the numbers in the tens of thousands. You and 10,000 other people. Are you putting yourself on the list? Are you in any way Messiah, Alifnei Iver? Can you think of anywhere? No, everybody's masking to this. All the posting. On this point, everybody agrees. As far as I know, I didn't see anyone who disagrees with this. To put yourself on the list, that's not where the trouble begins. Here's where the trouble begins. Because at this point, they decided to take the heart. So they go to the top of the list, and they take Mr. Top, right? And they check him out. Is he compatible? It's not like getting bone marrow. You don't need that type of compatibility. But you need still a certain degree of compatibility. You need to be viable, right, in every way. And then they say to him, okay, him and his doctor, do you want the heart? So he says, yes. Then what happens? Well, he says yes. They get his surgical team revved up. They get the surgical team in the donor's hospital, and this could be across the country. Right? It's amazing what goes on. Usually they keep it regional. Right? They wanted to, once they make the decision to take out the heart, they'd like to do it within 4 hours, at the latest 6 hours. They have a very finite time span to do this. They get the heart out, and then they get it over to him. Transport, transplant, done. Okay. Did he do anything wrong? Did he do anything to cause the death of the donor?
Yes.
What do you think? What's your humble opinion?
Yes.
And then we'll look at the machlokes. You say yes.
Yeah.
How?
If he would have said no, they wouldn't have.
What would have happened?
At that point, they would have gone down the list.
Good.
To prevent.
Excellent. That's the argument. That's exactly the argument. If right over here, Mr. Top says no, right? Although Enoch Inami, they're going to go just get it from someone else. But what's he doing? He's buying time. This guy would have been dead, I don't know how long it takes, a couple of hours, whatever it is. He's by saying yes, you can argue he's being memaher his death. The death of the donor. If you look at page 5, right, what we just went through, and what I like about page 5, page 5 is a letter from Rav Feivel Cohen to Rav Shlomo Zalman and to Rav Yoshev regarding this issue. He was dealing with it now in Brooklyn and in his kehila and to people that come to him for shilas who need a transplant. He had to deal with it and he didn't know what to do. So he said, is it okay? He thought, he went through this, and by the way, He gives the Hametzius there. This is the most accurate of all the Torah articles where they describe the process of transplant. I thought that he had it the best. He had the most accuracy in his description of what goes on. And he determined, if you look on the right side, on the bottom paragraph, exactly what you just said, that this is should be awesome. Even Yahar Vayavu. They're being asked. That's all they know. Right? That means they're on top. Right? In other words, as soon as they're confronted with a decision, the doctor and the patient at this point have to give an answer. If they say no, they just bought the guy a few, I don't know how, it'll depend on the details of what's going on. They bought him more time. If they say yes, they just signed his death. Because the heart's still in there. They didn't take the heart out yet. Right? He might be brain dead, but he's still heart alive. Turn to page 6, just to get a better idea of the definition of the Meiser Tzicha or not. For this, we have something as nice and simple as the Shulchan Aruch, right? Or you would have thought. Famous Simon Kufnun Zayin talks about Yavo Yavo. So if you look at the Ramah gives you three caveats to understand when it comes to Yavo Yavo. Number one, Dafka Kisha'omim Lo La'asos Masa. If it's completely passive, Sheva Al Taseh, you don't have to die. It is not Yahar Vayavo. To do Shvichas Damim passively, right? The example the Ramah gives, if they throw you on the baby, and you're just like a rock or a tree, that is not, you're not chayiv to die, not to avoid doing that. Okay. What he's doing here, is that akin to Sheva Al Taseh? What do you think? Would you argue that what he's doing is Sheva Al Taseh? I would not. And no one else would, because he's doing something. He's not like a passive rock being thrown, right? He's affirming, he's actively saying, yes, I want the heart. He actively had himself on the list, but that, we can argue, is a separate event. But at this point, he's telling them, yes, I want you to take out that heart. The only reason they're taking out that heart at this time is because he's saying to do it. So it is not just an easy shed al tas. Next, the Ramah says, Kol iser avodas kochavim gilei arayish v'chaz damim af al pi she'en bo misa rak lav be'alma tzarech l'harav v'yavor. He says, and by the way, don't think that in order to be harav v'yavor you need to be a meiser tzicha that you're chayiv misa for. Right? Because would he have been chayiv misa for this?
No.
No, why not? What is he? What would you term this halachically? He is a goren. Right. He's a goren. Is a Gorem Chayiv Misa? Certainly not. Is a Gorem Yahar Vayavo? Yes. He is.
But for he's a Meshalech, man.
What?
And he's a Meshalech. Shlichus Dorever, isn't that?
Say it again?
Why wouldn't you say he's a Meshalech? And there's already a Shluchim, and since we're saying Shlichus Dorever, so then it doesn't connect to him at all.
Because he's more like a Socher Poel. To do Baritzicha. Baritzicha, do we say that Baritzicha?
Yes, when we are calling on Shammai.
I think the Rama paskins that if you, the person who pays the murderer to do the Baritzicha would still also be Chayim.
Yeah.
Actually, if you look at the Five Akon, he puts that in as well. That's exactly what
he
calls.
They pay the doctors for this?
He views it that way. They certainly do pay the doctors. Doctors always get paid. That's always part of
this guy.
He, Rafaiva, views this as akin to the Socher poem. So, but there's one other little point here, though. And that is, the third point the Rama makes is that Alav de Lifnei Iver, Lotiten Mikshol, Yavor Va'al Tehar. But for Lifnei Iver, you don't have to die. So what's the difference between this Gorem, right? How do you differentiate a Gorem who is Yarav Yavor from a Lifnei Iver who's not? So if you look at the Shach on Lifnei Iver, he gives you the following example. He says, it means that if a guy comes over to you and asks for a gun, he doesn't tell you he's using it to kill anybody, right? Certainly doesn't specify somebody he's going to kill with it, he just asks you for a gun. And ultimately, what might he do with that? He might kill some Jew. Are you? Is that Yargo Yavor? No. All things be equal, should you give him a gun? No, don't give the guy a gun, just in case he's using it for, you know, bad reasons. You know, obviously it's a guy who you suspect, right? But what if he holds a knife to your throat and says, give me a gun or I'm going to kill you. Give him the gun. What if he holds a knife to your throat and says, give me a gun to kill Shmuel with? What are you supposed to do? Right? You're supposed to, what's the difference between those two cases? So Shlomo Zalman thought that it's significantly different and very much applicable to our situation, the difference. What's the difference between those two cases? So to begin with, one difference is, in one of them, we're specifying a specific person that will directly be killed as a result of my giving this gun. That's a goyim. And in the other one, in the Lifnei Iver, that's going to be mutter, there's no specification. Maybe he won't even do that. Maybe he won't kill anybody with this gun. And certainly that's a less direct rum. What you're going to begin to see is that it gets very hazy over here. Very hazy where we exactly draw the line. If you go back now to page 2, I will tell you that this is going to be the point of the machlokes between Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv. Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv held that this move over here, from this to top, to say yes, was like this. Rav Aaron will say, this is not even this. It's nothing. It's not a gorim at all. Right? Here's where he says it over here. Take a look at this from the RJJ Journal. First look on the bottom, he says, whether a certain potential doni puts his name on the list or not, the heart or liver is removed from the brain dead patient anyway. It is the surgeon who commits the act of murder directly. It is the doctors and the nurses who help the surgeon to remove the heart or liver who are they're betters. And they're all part of the act of Ritzicha. It's really Yargo Yavor for all those doctors and all the doctors helping them out and the OR nurse and all that. However, the potential doctor, Baruch Hashem, of the potential doni, who puts his name on the list as a potential doni or the doni himself, is not a participant in the act of murder in any way. In any way? He's not even an accessory? He is, right? You can't deny the fact that there's some relationship here, right? Like you said, there's a relationship. He's going sooner, right? He's an accessory. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik will say he's not a goreim, but he has to admit he is an accessory to the early demise of this individual. But Rav Aaron will tell you there's one other very important nekuda. If you look up, where it says the word answer, Rav Soloveitchik says, the statement made by the aforementioned distinguished rabbi, there was a rabbi who had made the statement that, you know, this rabbi was very much in favor of brain death and everybody should be masking that brain death is real death. So he said, and all of you people that don't hold by brain death, don't tell me you could ever receive, because it's an absolute usher for you to receive a heart if you're not going to say that it's also okay to take the heart. So Rav Soloveitchik did not agree with that. He said, despite this statement by this distinguished rabbi, to wit, that one is not allowed even for the purpose of preserving his life to participate as accessory before or after the fact in an act of murder, is halakhically inaccurate. Why? Right? In other words, Rav Aaron would say, let's say, agree that there is an accessory level here. He doesn't make it to the goyim because it's not direct enough, but you can't deny that there's some relationship between the actions of the recipient and the ultimate death of that other donor. What are they arguing about? Is it just like they're feeling over whether or not, you know, accessory is bad enough to be a goyim? So it seems, if you turn the page, that to me the whole machlokes comes down to this sugya in the Dan. It's the Gemara of Ulam, the one that was mentioned earlier. And this is really the take-home sugya for this whole machlokes. Gemara in the Dan starts off by some good advice. Don't get angry, right? That is the opening issue. What could happen? So we find out from the story of Ula what could happen. Ula, the Miskir, the Aradi Yisrael, Islabulay trained Bnei Chuzai Bahadir. On his way to Yisrael, he was accompanied by these two Bnei Chuzai. Are they Jewish? Important. Yes, they're Jewish. These two nice Jewish boys came along with him. Apparently, one got angry. Kam chad shach de chavre. One of them slits the throat of his friend. Amar le ula. Ya'ut avdi. So he says to Ula, so what do you think? Did I do the right thing? Is it okay what I did? What would you say? He's holding the knife. So Amar le in upale beis hashchita. Finish it off. Tells him finish it off. Ki at lekame de Rabbi Yochanan. He comes to Rabbi Yochanan talking about Ula. So Amar le dilma chas v'shalom achziki yedei over there. Was I an accessory? Perhaps I was an accessory to this murder. So Amar le nafshech hitzat. You did okay. You saved your life. Who does this support? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik or Shlomo Zalman? So the chor, it's obvious, right? It seems to be a direct support for Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, right? It's exactly what he's saying. What do we have here? We have here not a golem, right? This guy was going to be killed anyway, right? He was going to finish him off either way. But he kind of was, if you look at the Rishonim, if you look at the Rosh, if you look at Rashi or the Ram, he hurried it up. His purpose in telling him to cut the guy's throat the rest of the way was the Maher Misa, the Misa. Now, this is a Nogea to euthanasia, Sugya, by the way. It's brought in there also, because what was Ula thinking? Maybe this was active euthanasia, I don't know, but we'll get back to that in the following weeks. But for here, it seems clear that for Hatzalas Nafsho, he was allowed to, in this very indirect, passive way, be memahir, the misa of the guy that was going to die anyway. That meets a lot of the criteria that we're looking for. So, how could Rav Shlomo Zalman argue with this? How is this case any different than what Ula did? That's what we want to understand. It all comes down to that. Why is the Makabel of a heart any different than what Ula did? Let's compare them. Rav Shlomo Zalman will be molded that the setup looks exactly the same. What are the facts over here? The facts are this guy is dead either way, right? The other fact is that the Makabel, Mr. Tak, is the Pikuach Nefesh, for sure. And number three is, at worst, all he's doing is Bepeh, being Memaher, the Misa of the guy that would die anyway. In those respects, there's absolutely no difference with what Ula was confronted with, right? What's Ula confronted with? His life is in danger. That's for sure. The guy's going to kill him. Number two, the guy who's dying over there, that Gosais, is going to die anyway. And number three, all he's doing is being Memahir, the Misa. He's telling them, do it. And he's not acting. He's saying, this was, Tiferes Yisrael said, he thinks Ula could have even done it, let alone say to do it. But we're not going to go that far. Nobody does. So can anyone think of a chiluk that Rav Shlomo Zalman might make on this? Because that's what it all comes down to. Anybody?
Well, in terms of what I was trying to suggest, so here he's not paying him, so this...
Paying him.
Right. Meaning over there you wanted to say that the fact that he was paying him makes
him
accessory.
No, it wasn't payment as much as getting him into the act. You know, hiring in the sense, it doesn't have to be for money, much.
So over here I would say the ein shliach of avera. At worst, he's a shliach, no?
I know, but we're not... The ein shliach of avera means the rotzeach, which chayav misa, is going to be the mamash rotzeach, not the meshalech. But it doesn't mean the Meshalech is off the hook for a tzicha, according to any shita, right? In other words, ein shliach l'raver, true, but it doesn't mean that you're not involved in the ma'aseh tzicha, and that you're not culpable, and it might still be arv v'yachid. In fact, Shlomo Zalman is going to say it is, but he's going to make a very interesting chiluk that I think, you know, I was very much, this caused a lot of difficulty for me, because I was very much, the poskim that I had spoken to were very much in the Tzir of Aaron Soloveitchik's corner on this issue. Made a lot of sense to me. The upshot of Aaron Soloveitchik's approach is even in Eretz Yisrael, you can accept the heart. Even if this is Jews, right? Because we're saying that Ula did it, and it involved Jews, right? Ula did it to a Jew, and the Gemara's conclusion is that it was okay. And that's exactly what seems to be going on over here, but there's a big difference. And what's the big difference? The big difference, if you want to see it in writing, it's below. But let's talk about it a little. If you want to see a similar in Kobet Shir and Ksuvos, Simon Ches, my son, I don't know how he got this Ma'amakom today, showed me, because I was talking to him about this, he showed me that Rabbi Chaim Wasserman says exactly this here, what the Shlomo Zalman says. Right? It's in Ksuvos, Simon Ches, Kobet Shir. This is good for the Lumbus and what's going on here altogether. If you ever learn these Sugyas, especially what's going on with the Rambam, right? Let's look at the Rambam. That's what Rosh Hashanah Zalman brings in the Rambam as a raya for the Chiluk he makes. If you look in Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Hay, the Rambam has two interesting halachas. Halacha number one is, what happens if somebody is in a situation of Yavor, and he's over there? What's the din, right? Somebody has a gun to their head, and they're told, if you don't shoot Joe, I'm going to shoot you, and he shoots Joe. Is he chayv misa for the tzicha? No. What does the Rambam say? Hafter. Why? Onus. That's onus. However, what if there's a chola, right, who's dying, and for whatever reason, don't ask me the mitzvahs, for whatever reason, the only way he could survive is if he's over the Avodah Zarah. And he does it. Right? He should have died. What's the din? He's chayv misa. What's the difference between those two cases? What? Onus and Ratzon. That's exactly... Everyone understand why that's Onus and Ratzon, how that works? Right? What's the difference between Onus and Ratzon? What do you mean Onus and Ratzon? That's correct. But what does that mean? It's easy to read. No, what does it really mean? Onus and Ratzon. I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it also. No one's spelling it out over here. Lefiyah Nizdati, this is what it means. And it's why it's so applicable to this situation. Ula was faced with an onus situation, right? There was a gun to his head, and he was told that, basically, if you don't go along with me, you're dead. Is he thinking it through and coming beritzono to a decision that I'm going to go ahead and kill, or is it almost reflexive, you have a gun to your head, shoot. As opposed to a person, right, who is min hashamayim, afflicted with some type of illness, right? Where he has to make now a calculated decision what he's going to do. To me, that's the only way I can really make sense of the onus and ratzon chiluk over here. Because otherwise, both of them are onus, right? Onus min hashamayim, onus yidei adam, that's really the only difference, presumably, right? One person's dying because he has a heart failure. Another person's at risk of dying because there's a gun to his head. So one, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, is onus. The one with a gun to your head, that's onus if you end up killing. But in the case of where you're dying, and then you choose to kill somebody in order to save you, that was done biratza.
In the onus case, until you have a little bit more time to calculate out what you want to do.
Would that change that...
Let's say the person that was dying was going to die in the next 5 seconds.
No, but it's sort of like this. It's the matzav itself is continuous, that the gun is to your head. You're continuous. You can't get out. You can't escape the onus. In other words, it isn't as trivial as I put it, right? It isn't just like you have time to think it through versus you don't have time to think it through. That's not the issue. It's not an issue of time. It's the issue of the circumstances. In other words, like, your entire matzav is generated by the onus, in the onus case. And the entire decision to kill is at the point of a gun. So you're an onus. But when something independent of the matzav itself, right? The matzav means that you have to now decide to kill this guy. You have to make a conscious decision. Shamayim was unkind to you. You know, whatever reason, you have this horrible heart condition and you're dying. You have to now go, unrelated to that matzav, get yourself involved in somebody else's matzav and make a decision on them, right? To do something. Or have something done to them. That's more beratzon than when the entire matzav itself is the gun into your head forcing you to make the decision. It's a very subtle chiluk, but it's the one that Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashiv both maintain is the reason that it's absolutely usher they felt in Eretz Yisrael to put yourself on a list. It all comes down to this chiluk right over here. Because otherwise it's difficult to differentiate it and understand why it should be different. But it leaves you with one question that I really want to end this topic that we won't be able to discuss as much as I wanted to. So that's good. I understand where they're coming from, even though it's very difficult. We have to talk more about the chiluk between Onus and Ratzon. But what's the difference between the United States and Eretz Yisrael? Why is it different in the United States? Why don't we have that same dilemma in the United States? So there was an article somebody showed me here by somebody from YU, where the person stated that the reason it's different in the United States is because there's only an Issa D'Rabbanan to facilitate the death of a non-Jew. Really, they said to kill a non-Jew. A non-Bnei Bris. I don't know exactly where that was derived, because if it was that simple, then I would expect that when Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yosef are explaining the chiluk between the United States and Eretz Yisrael, I would see them say something like, well, it all comes down to that one fact, Rov Nochrim and Rov Yehudim. But it doesn't. And we're going to have to stop. Maybe before, just in the first few minutes, the first 10 minutes next week, we'll talk about this further, but it isn't that simple. And the chiluk between the United States and Eretz Yisrael and is far more complicated than just the question of, well, it's less of a chiyuv ritzicha by non-Jew. Why? Who's the one doing the ritzicha in the United States? The actual ritzicha.
Surgeon.
The doctor. What are the odds of him being a Jew or non-Jew? Even a doctor. It's still a row of non-Jews. Makes the whole cheshbon different, because for a non-Bnei Bris, to kill a non-Bnei Bris, he's totally awesome in their eyes. That's definitely awesome. Right? Even if you're going to make arguments in terms of the other case. So we have to talk about it a little more. We'll stop now, and we'll just do quickly next week. This one issue we'll focus on. Why is it that Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yashi felt that it was end of Waldenberg, felt that it was okay in the United States, but not okay in the United States? Anyone who can come up with a further insight into the difference between Onus and Ratzon, please feel free to share it with all of us.
Well,